Kaiju dudes, yeah?
Yeah. Still the coolest roar out of anything.
Say, if you ever want to get a black eye, play that when your girlfriend walks into the room.
That and the Imperial March.
Nah, she likes that.
Oh, you experimented?
No. I don't do any of that. I love my girlfriend. I'm surprised she hasn't left me.
Yeah, so are we. Anyways, welcome to Entertain This, a podcast about movies, TV shows, and video games. Today, we're going to be talking about the all-important Japanese kaiju.
Kaiju?
But first,
kaiju?
We have our social media, which is entertainthispodcast.com, which will take you to our Facebook group and page. We also have our Twitter/X, which is @thisentertain, and our Instagram, which is entertain.this. And because Tom and I know very little about kaiju, we have our friends Nathan and Michael here. To expand,
and you're a glutton for punishment. Just
you should have said Michael and Nathan.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Oh yeah, I forgot because somebody is just not willing to go second. It was well. No, I am no bottom feeder. I am no bottom.
Well, then maybe you should start podcasting about kaiju again.
Maybe, or I just leave it to you and just. So that when I do make my triumphant return, people will have something to actually look forward to.
Oh, are you trying to say you're the second coming? Seems very lofty of you.
I mean, I'm a giver, so I try to come second usually.
Oh, really? Yeah.
He has his own sounds.
Armed with his sound effects.
Oh man, I feel like the energy that we just had a few minutes ago talking about stuff that's completely unrelated is carrying over. So,
the dude's show is starting to materialize itself. It's manifesting.
No,
Godzilla, damn it, kaiju. Get on track, boys.
This is how great podcasts start, just with a conversation and just each other.
I mean, that's where the power trip came from. It was just you and me having private conversations about Power Rangers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you were lonely, so I obliged.
Well, that's how ours started.
You ended up very lonely too, because that's why you were going back to nostalgia.
Our whole podcast started just because we'd get off work and start talking about movies, TVs, and the video games we wanted to go home and play. So.
Right.
Well, yeah, because you guys live have a very intense job, so you need.
Yeah, we need to go home and play games or else, and kill things.
Or else you will become the criminals that your friends then have to arrest.
But for real, guys, thanks for having us back. I know it's been so long since we've talked.
Like 30 seconds.
Remember that time he paused to breathe?
Yeah, that was
remember that time we paused in between recordings? That.
Yeah, that was an amazing breath, guys.
That was such a good pause.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now make Daddy a sandwich.
He Anthony Mackie'd it.
He verbalized it.
Oh. Yeah, what people don't know is like we talked for like almost an hour between recordings and just talking about
completely
nonsense.
Unrelated things.
Completely random too.
And probably shouldn't be re-mentioned at this point.
Cancellation
material.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about. I totally mind my people.
Hashtag plausible deniability.
Oh yeah.
Except for the fact that
I took a very extended bathroom break.
What are we talking about?
You did more than pee, didn't you?
Hey, you know, you got to do what you got to do, man. It's been a lonely season.
You poor man.
Okay, so kaiju. I guess kaiju? Yeah, we're doing kaiju. Okay. Kaiju. Kaiju and you.
Bless
the TED Talk by... yeah. the TED talk by one Mr. Nathan Marchand.
Oh, really? Oh, I get to do this? I get to do this? Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Tell me.
You are the village idiot. I mean, you are the resident expert.
Oh.
What
because I have a master's degree and all that fun stuff, you know, that I only remind people about, you know, every other sentence.
Oh, yeah.
That's the fourth time he's brought it up.
Exactly that.
In 8 minutes. So,
only four? I'm lagging.
The next time you bring it up, Nathan, I'm going to kick you in your nuts.
Too bad for you. I have none.
Wow.
That was a strange ego challenge right there.
That was a ego challenge right there. Joke's on you.
Wow. That was okay. Joke's on you. Joke's on you. I'm a eunuch.
You're just going to be kicking nothing but gooch. What is a kaiju?
Oh, the age-old question.
Well, some would say that it's a strange beast. Also, some would argue that things like Clifford can be kaiju. But I disagree, because Clifford is a dog with a hormone disorder. And real kaiju, like Godzilla and Gamera and other names that I'm going to probably say that no one has a freaking clue what I'm talking about, like King Ghidorah and Hedorah, are actual kaiju.
Oh, but so we also know some who would say that they must be from Japan in order to be kaiju, which makes no sense, because technically Ghidorah is from space, sir. And in one case, he's from the future, and it's clearly not Japan in the future. And in another one, he's from a horrible Lovecraftian hell dimension.
This one is from, like, Planet X, and it accidentally has a planet with an X on it.
I'm just saying, I think a certain someone's definition of kaiju is both far too broad and far too narrow at the same time.
We're talking about Elijah, right?
Interpretation is what I'm getting.
Yes. Right. It does. If you take the literal meaning of the word, which is indeed strange beast, it does leave a lot of room for interpretation. It leaves a lot of room.
Because anything can be associated to large monsters.
Well, right. Japanese, technically, a large monster is a dai kaiju. Because dai, D-A-I, if you spell it out in English, is a prefix denoting large or great or big. You know, when you had us on to talk about Power Rangers and Zoo Ranger, we were making jokes about Dai Satan. It literally means Great Satan. That's how it usually gets subtitled, at least by shout.
Or you could use it in other terms, like Dai Johnson or Dai.
You're an idiot.
I thought you were talking about Don Johnson there for a second, but okay.
I was actually talking about Dwayne Johnson.
He looks like a penis.
He looks like a walking penis. But, you know,
Jesus.
I'm trying to say he has a hole on the top of his head.
No, I'm not. No, not even going to finish that to its natural conclusion. Okay.
No, I'm just going to bury that one and keep going.
We're just going to bury that. Just bury it. Bury it deep. Swallow it. Wait, no, can't say that either.
Although to transition us, it could be argued Dwayne Johnson is a kaiju. I mean, he hung out with kaiju in a movie, three of them.
True, and he's the size of one.
Rampage counts as a kaiju film.
Yeah.
What counts as a kaiju film?
Rampage.
Rampage
with the giant albino gorilla and the alligator and the wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, because like I was going to say before, like if you follow the word and its meaning to its natural, if you follow it to like its ultimate conclusion, like a friggin' platypus could be a kaiju because it's a strange beast, right? Like
I would, because it's still a naturally occurring animal.
Nathan, I'm talking. Quit interrupting me.
But I'm so good at it.
You are. You know what? You're such a good boy. You are such a good boy, aww, and you interrupt people really well.
I do.
You really need to, but you really need to learn how to shoot.
Well, STFU too.
Anyway, anyway, go ahead. You finish your thought, Nathan. I derailed you about the planet.
Yeah. No, the thing is that there's two ways to approach this question. You can either approach it as what creatures qualify as kaiju. There's also the kaiju genre. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, both are pretty dicey in arguments usually ensue when you try to pin it down. No one has fully agreed on criteria, really, for either one. I would say it's easier, maybe, to pin down the kaiju genre than what is a kaiju, period. Although, then you have to start asking questions like, well, how long must the large creature be in the movie to qualify as a quote-unquote kaiju film? And, you know, but what if it's only there at the end of the movie and it's not even the main focus of the movie? And, you know, it starts getting kind of dicey there. But, you know. Yeah, and then you have to start asking questions like, you know, going back to Power Rangers, are the monsters in Power Rangers kaiju? I mean, they technically start off small. They are, but they also start off small. So maybe in the literal definition, they are.
Like a platypus.
That's a naturally occurring animal, sir. A weird one, yes, but a naturally occurring animal. It is not strange.
Kind of strange.
Like, Michael, you literally
just said it was weird, and you said it's not strange.
But it's unusual in the animal kingdom, but it's still a naturally occurring animal. Okay, Michael, how about I bring up the infamous question that nearly broke all of your podcasts? Are dinosaurs kaiju?
No,
they're not. The dinosaurs in Jurassic Park are, because they're genetically engineered animals.
Wait a minute, I don't remember that being your stance before. Have you changed your mind?
I've changed my mind, okay? Screw you. Screw you for putting me on the spot.
You're not allowed to change your mind and have opinions.
I'm allowed to change my mind, damn it.
How dare you have a thought?
How dare I go through a season of reflection on whether or not Jurassic Park dinosaurs were actually kaiju or not?
Don't be reasonable.
The Indominus Rex.
Indominus Rex is a kaiju. The Indoraptor is a kaiju. Everything else?
Yeah, but it's still...
I mean, aren't the dinosaurs like kaiju because they had to replicate the DNA using other DNA sequences?
That's a reasonable argument to make, but I would still say not quite. But the freaking Indominus has more superpowers than Superman. I'm sorry.
But that thing's
ridiculous, and it never existed until it was made, genetically engineered.
But dinosaurs, if you're watching, like, Our Planet, and you're watching, like, the dinosaur special on I think it's on Netflix, if you're watching that, those are not kaiju. Those are just animals.
Uh-huh. Although, then this does start getting kind of murky, because there are dinosaurs in kaiju movies, and you have to start asking, like, do they qualify? Is Anguirus a kaiju? Is he just a big dinosaur?
He is a pretty large.
We'll be right back.
Ever thought modern video games should be more interesting? At The Gaming Blender, we take randomized genres, mechanics, and make a new game every episode.
I've added permadeath.
We have a survival game of a hardcore simulation, which could be House Flipper, and with the permadeath of XCOM. Then that all has to be an action adventure.
Yes.
Ooh, dear.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't quite work.
And you have a construction off over the course of the narrative.
A construction off? The way we can do this is that we ditch your idea entirely.
Entirely.
Check out The Gaming Blender on all your favorite podcast platforms now.
Dinosaur. These are good questions. Who would you say is credited as being the first kaiju?
Yeah, what was the origin of the
King
kaiju
Kong?
Genre?
King Kong is the first credit. Is King Kong the first credited kaiju?
I would argue that King Kong is the first kaiju. He's the first
King Kong movie certainly paved the way for how we understand what kaiju are. It's the predecessor to everything. Without King Kong, we wouldn't have gotten Godzilla.
When did King Kong come out?
1933. Yeah,
oh, okay.
In the 1930s.
I was thinking Godzilla came out first.
No, Godzilla didn't come out until 1954.
Okay.
Yep. And A.G. Tsuburaya, who did the special effects on a bunch of Godzilla films in the 50s and 60s, was a massive fan of that movie, had his own personal print of the film, showed it to Haruo Nakajima, who played Godzilla in the suit, as, you know, basically telling him, I want you to do something like this, except in a suit. And one of the impetuses for making the first Godzilla film was the fact that King Kong had been re-released in Japan, I think in 52 or 53, somewhere thereabouts. It was a massive hit. So producer Tomoyuki Tanaka said, you know what? We should do something like that.
Big lizard with spikes on him. Fire.
Uh-huh.
Warning everybody about the horrors of nuclear testing.
Uh-huh.
Well, that kind of takes into the thing that I was going to ask was, like, is there any, like, common themes for kaiju films, or are they all just kind of broad spectrum?
Big monsters, big fights.
It is pretty broad, I would say, you know, because you have stuff that that really wants to use the monster as a metaphor and, and get into some really serious stuff, and then other times they're just popcorn flicks, which sounds very reductionist, but you know what I mean.
But Godzilla versus Kong. Godzilla versus Kong was a popcorn flick, whereas Godzilla Minus One, which is what just came out, became a darling among even Americans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that movie. Some would argue that Minus One is kaiju film at its quote purest, right? Because it still addresses the nuclear allegory, the tragedy of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and all that. So, like, that's what fans would say is, like, the purest kaiju film or the purest Godzilla film, because it does use Godzilla as an allegory. But like Nathan said, you can have films like Godzilla vs. Kong, which are just fun, ridiculous films. And you can have, like, kaiju, what is it? What is that film from SRS? Kaiju Soup or Kaiju something?
Which one?
The one with, like, the giant octopus and the crab and all that. What is that one? I never watched.
Kaiju Seafood Wars.
Kaiju Seafood Wars, which is a Kaiju Seafood Wars.
Live in Red Lobster.
Ridiculous comic.
You're not too far off.
Godzilla's out of cheddar biscuits, and he's going to take it out on the nearest thing he gets to.
You were saying,
but,
Michael?
No, I was just going to say, like, kaiju, like you said, Nathan, like, kaiju films can have a broad range of meanings, mm-hmm. or unmeanings, or just they can cover a lot of stuff. Like Shin Godzilla was a direct response to the
311 disasters. Most obviously Fukushima, the Fukushima disaster.
Yeah, the Fukushima disaster. That's the word I was trying to think of, the Fukushima disaster. So Shin Godzilla was a response to that.
Okay.
It's broader than I think some people realize. There are also some that are not, and now unfortunately these aren't as common as I would like them to be. There are some that aren't even set in present day and have big cities, you know. The Daimajin trilogy from 1966, I believe. All three movies from 1966. Those are set in feudal Japan, and the quote-unquote kaiju is a statue that comes to life.
I wouldn't call that a kaiju. I wouldn't call that a kaiju.
Call it a gargoyle.
No. I wouldn't call that a kaiju. I would call that a kami, which goes... There, which goes into another.
Yeah, but kami can area. Be kaiju.
Kami can be kaiju, but I would not see Daimajin as a kaiju, because to me kaiju are more akin to animals or more akin to like stranger creatures,
organic beings.
Because King Ghidorah is
totally an animal.
He's a dragon, Nathan. He's a dragon. He's a
gold space dragon.
Cold space. Then why can't Daimajin be considered just because he's a big statue that comes to life?
Because he's more humanoid.
Like Jaguar.
I just don't see.
So is Frankenstein from Frankenstein Conquers the World.
But those are more Bigfoot. The gargantuas are more Bigfoot. I would not say Frankenstein from Frankenstein Conquers the World is a kaiju either.
What is
that
it?
That is a what is the word? Kaijin? Is it kaijin? No, is that kaijin or which was the one from space? Is that shoujin or kaijin?
Seijin.
Seijin is the one from space. What's the more human one?
You had it right. It was kaijin.
Kaijin. Okay, so I would classify
strange man.
So Daimajin is more of a kai. Let's split the baby and say that he's more of a kaijin than a kaiju.
Isn't he a little big though? He's like 50 feet tall.
Oh my god!
Because when you say kaijin to me, I think like monsters and Power Rangers and Super Sentai before me.
Or the
monsters that Kamen Rider fights.
True, but it's more human. But Daimajin's more humanoid, so I would still argue that he is kaijin, not kaiju.
Okay, but what about Power Ranger monsters then? Are they kaiju or kaijin?
They're kaijin when they're human size. They're kaiju when they're large.
So you're trying to say that they are both?
They're whatever. You're trying to trap me. You're doing a good job.
Damn it, you've talked to me into this corner.
Damn it, I can admit it when I'm not wrong, but still, at the same time, questioning what I believe.
Is my name really Michael?
Is my name really Spock?
You're talking about
He's deconstructing his kaiju fandom right now.
Well, like you said, like normal animals that just are big can't be kaiju, but like, what about Mothra? She's just a big
No. If the animals are unusually large, and that is the only thing that's strange about them, I could make the argument that makes them a kaiju. So, if you see a raccoon hanging out doing normal raccoon things, not a kaiju. If it gets irradiated and suddenly it's 50 feet tall, kaiju.
Or its nuts get irradiated and becomes a tanuki, then it's a kaiju. But that's...
What?
Of course Michael would go there. What I would love to, and along those lines, what I would love to see is Russia should get its own kaiju, and it needs to be a bear that got a little too close to Chernobyl at the wrong time.
Giant two-headed bear.
I mean, we got that with Cocaine Bear. What more do you want?
I guess Cocaine Bear might actually qualify because how many bears get high on cocaine?
I was going to say the scary part, that's real.
That was based on a true event. That for 15 minutes, that bear was the most apex predator on the planet.
Until its heart stopped, and then that's how it died.
Yeah. Well, and then, okay, here, let's complicate it even further. Is Mecha Godzilla a kaiju?
He's a robot.
He's a robot.
He's a
kaiju. Can a robot be a kaiju?
Nah.
No.
No, it's man-made.
Man-made.
Well, technically, Mecha Godzilla was made by aliens.
Well, you know what I mean, Nathan.
I know.
He's mechanical.
Yeah, it's mechanical. There is a term for giant robot, which is mecha or mech,
right?
Depending on who you talk to. So that's a bit of a related term, and sometimes they can kind of overlap. Although, then you have Kiryu in the Millennium Godzilla series that technically has biological components, including a cloned Godzilla brain.
True.
Blurring the line there a little bit.
I mean, if it has organic parts, wouldn't that make it a kaiju?
I would argue it would, it's a cyborg kaiju at that point. Yeah.
But it's still a machine. It's not alive.
Mm-hmm.
So like a General Grievous.
So a giant zombie is not a kaiju.
No, because the a giant zombie was once alive and biological.
This is
mechanical.
It's an undead
cat. See. You're doing good there. I like it. Yeah.
I try really hard, guys.
I study for this.
I study, guys.
All you need is Nathan to like, give like a thumbs up and a little ching.
Ding. He got one right.
God be praised. All right, so what's the difference between a Japanese kaiju and like the Western kaiju films, like with Pacific Rim? Is there a difference between those?
Well, Pacific Rim is an interesting case because it borrows two foreign words and uses them for the names of the giant things in there. Although kaiju is actually now considered a loan word in English, and I attribute that in large part to Pacific Rim. But all the monsters in that are called kaiju, and then all the giant robots are called Jaegers, and Jaeger is the German word for hunter.
He is correct.
So, So I can say, the thing is, I honestly, before Pacific Rim came out, if I said the word kaiju, unless you were in the know, you didn't know what I was talking about, and I'd have to explain it. That's why I generally said giant monster. Mm-hmm. People understand that. Now I throw the word kaiju around, and I rarely get strange looks.
So Pacific Rim was more like a publicity thing for kaiju in that whole
in large part. I would say in large part it was, but it's funny that you asked me what's the difference, between the American and Japanese examples, because in the now defunct Kaiju Ramen, I wrote an article about that. And a lot of it, to put it succinctly, it really just boils down to how the monsters are presented, generally speaking. The American, quote-unquote, kaiju cinema tends to present the monsters more naturalistically, and which gives them more otherness. So you watch the movie Them from 1954, which is a great movie, I would say.
I love that movie.
It's
just giant ants.
Yeah, giant ants. And that's all they are. They're just giant ants doing ant things. They don't have funny names. And all they're trying to do is make a colony and, find food and reproduce. They're just doing normal ant things. That just makes them a problem for normal-sized humans. So we've got to go find some American flamethrowers and take them out.
Yeah. That movie is basically what I think inspired, like, Earth Defense Force.
Which are one of their many influences. Those games are insane and I love them. but you look at Godzilla from 1950, also from 1954, and that's given a lot of metaphorical weight. There's at least implications of there being supernatural elements that almost deify Godzilla to a certain extent. So they're treated very differently. They give the monsters names. There's a lot of stuff. Another big difference is how they handle certain subjects like science or the bomb, their attitudes toward the military. The American films tend to be more positive toward the military, whereas Japanese films are more ambivalent because of their history. There's treated a wide breadth of, genre.
It's treated like a tragedy. So look at two completely different films. You look at Godzilla from 1998, the Roland Emmerich film. Mm-hmm. When Godzilla dies at the end of that movie, everyone celebrates. It's very pro-military, et cetera, et cetera. But if you look at any of the Japanese Godzilla films, specifically 1954, we'll use 1954 as an example. But I'm sure there are others that Nathan will pull out of his hat in just a second. But it's treated as it's seen as a tragedy. Like, why did this creature have to die, or why did this creature come only to die, a day later or whatever? So it's just different. It's just treated. Mm-hmm. It's a different attitude towards. It's our different attitudes towards towards the subject matter. Whereas, right. Because, and I think it comes down to experience, right? Because, so Nathan, what Nathan was pointing out was you know, the Japanese has a very, the Japanese have a very reverent look at history. Like they look, obviously, you know, we're not the ones that, I'm not getting preachy here by no means, but we're, you know, we're not the ones that got a bomb dropped on us. So they're going to have a different experience than we would in terms of like how we view like militaristic things.
And Godzilla come out like less than a decade, like a year, you know, 9 years since.
9 years, yeah.
The Hiroshima and Nagasaki bombs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and what Michael was talking about is that it, Godzilla is a tragic creature even in the original film, because you can argue he's just as much of a quote-unquote victim of the bomb as the Japanese were. Yes, he's decimating cities, but you wouldn't have been doing that if not for the bomb.
Right. Yeah, because
so there's a level, there's a level of nuance there, and I would argue the nuance gets even more multifaceted later, you know, 10 years later, when Godzilla goes from being this atomic allegory and menace to Japan's greatest hero.
And then back to a bad guy, then back to a hero.
Well, yeah, later.
That's in 1985.
But still, for about 10 more years after, you know, after the mid-60s, he was practically a superhero.
Yeah.
An atomic-powered superhero, which, like I said, just adds a level of irony to it.
And I think that comes from outside. That comes from a little bit of influence from Ultraman and other, and, mm-hmm. and other tokusatsu properties that were going on at the same time. We talk, you know, Kamen Rider, Ultraman, Super Sentai, like very superhero shows. And so Toho just, I mean, even, Zone Fighter is a really good example.
Yep. Yep, which actually had Godzilla in a handful of episodes.
Right.
Hmm. And a couple of other monsters from his movies, Gigan and Ghidorah, most notably, appeared in that show. It was basically a Toho Ultraman clone.
It's a really good show. Highly recommend it if you're into that kind of thing.
It's bonkers.
I would say it's more bonkers. I would say it's a lot more bonkers than if you had such a good time. If you guys had such a good time with Zyuranger, you're gonna have much a good time.
I need to get more alcohol.
And here's the insane part. It's considered canon to the Godzilla show with series.
Huh. Yep, sure is.
A completely other show.
Just hanging out there, doing God knows what.
Yep.
No supervision.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
So for the kaiju films, like, I mean, they all have like your human counterparts, like mm-hmm. doing things. What is that typically, the kind of roles that they have in those movies?
The most common sorts of roles you'll see in those are reporters, scientists, and soldiers, most often.
Okay.
And there was he didn't necessarily invent all of this, because Godzilla 54 has all those kinds of characters in it. But there was a screenwriter by the name of Shinichi Sekizawa that really took those archetypal characters and ran with them and made them staples of the genre. Now, that isn't to say that every single movie, every single kaiju film is like that. Infamously, the Gamera series introduced us to children as frequent characters to varying levels of failure.
No success, just failure.
Except for Gamera the Brave. Gamera the Brave is amazing. One of the few kaiju films that nearly makes me cry. Yeah, that's from 2005, five or six, somewhere around there.
2006.
Yeah. But those are the ones you'll typically see. There are those. There's also some where you'll see politicians pretty often, not usually as primary characters, but politicians are in there, you know, because, you know, government leaders have to respond to things. Well, Shin Godzilla is probably the most obvious example of politicians as main characters. And, you know, but there are some where your main characters are just normal people trying to deal with stuff. Godzilla Raids Again is like, it was basically just your main characters were just blue collar people doing their thing, and Godzilla comes in and mucks everything up, and then they start getting more involved. To a certain extent, Minus One is like that, other than the fact that most of our characters, while they are civilians now, you used to be soldiers. So that's a little bit of a gray area.
I was going to say, or you have movies like the one that you convinced us to watch was Godzilla versus Megalon, where you have the crazy science, or I thought they were space people, but they live inside the Earth.
Yeah, Seatopia.
Seatopia.
Like The one you guys really should watch is Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster, because the hero in that is a cop.
Not Godzilla or anything. It's just...
Our human hero is a cop, and he's trying to protect a foreign princess who may or may not, in fact, be possessed by an alien. I know that sounds like it shouldn't make sense, but when you actually watch the movie, it actually makes sense. Am I right, Michael?
No, you're 100% right. 100%
right. That's not the one that has Godzilla Rodan, right? Or that is not Godzilla versus Monsters.
Rodan, actually, Rodan is interesting because that one, it's mostly just regular people. It's people in a small mining town.
But he was talking about Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster being Rodan. Well, I think Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster was the first appearance of Rodan within the Godzilla canon.
Within the volume. And his second appearance overall.
And his second appearance overall, yeah. Because the first movie was from 1956, and it was a solo film. Well, solo as in, like, a single species of Rodan.
There were two Rodans.
Okay, I didn't.
Still a better love story than Twilight.
That's an oldie but a goodie.
I mean, they have this very Shakespearean ending. You know, it's like Romeo and Juliet, except they weren't star-crossed lovers. What's hilarious is that it happened by accident. So the idea initially, is the Rodans are supposed to quote unquote die in a volcanic eruption. And one of them gets caught, and one of the props got caught in the lava, and the other one was supposed to fly away, but it ended up malfunctioning, and it fell down back into the lava. So they wrote lines into the script where they said that the other one just couldn't handle that its mate had died in the lava, so it threw itself in there to die with it.
Okay.
It's like, oh, well, we dropped it, so yeah, it's dead too.
Oh, God,
that could be an urban legend. I'm not sure.
That's like History of the World Part 1, where Mel Brooks comes down as Moses, and he's like, I bring you these 15, and he drops one of the tablets. And he's like, these 15, 10 commandments.
Yeah. So those are the kinds. So again, you can see a variety of characters. You're mostly typically going to see soldiers, scientists, and reporters.
Okay.
It's really I was just going to point out that it's more often than not, typically, your scientists and your just average Joes, and your average Joes just, they take the roles as the main protagonists in the Japanese films rather than in the American films, like especially the ones from the 50s. It's typically military personnel that are the leading men and women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of times. Although them has a scientist in it who's presented pretty positively. Same thing actually in Beast in 20,000 Fathoms, which was from 1953 and is also one of the key influences on the original Godzilla. In fact, it's freaky how much Godzilla borrows from it if you watch that movie after seeing Godzilla 54, you're like, oh my gosh, how much did they steal from this? it's kind of wild.
You'd be going to the dean's office for academic dishonesty. Yep.
Possibly. Another common archetype that you will see, but not quite as frequently as the others, is the native girl. We've had a few of those, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm. Got to get the pretty faces in there, because the public must have a pretty face. As Carl Denham would tell us.
Damn it.
Well, so with kaijus being around since the 30s, essentially, with King Kong, what has kept them so popular? Like, why? How does people just still keep watching kaiju films?
there's a multitude of reasons for that.
I think it's like the culture. A lot of times it's cultural relevance. It's like kaiju films are a lot of times a reflection of what's going on geopolitically, socially. If you look at Godzilla versus Hedorah from 1972, Godzilla versus Hedorah from 1972, you're looking at like environmentalism, and if you're looking at, and if you take a film also like Godzilla's Revenge from 1969, that also addresses that also has a lot of cultural context pertaining to children. Mm-hmm. So
Latchkey kids,
because in the 60s. On into the 70s, there were a lot like working class towns, factory towns, etc. Lots of latchkey kids.
The parents were working a lot more, and because Japan in the 60s they exploded economically. Like they made such a massive turnaround economically, you know, after the devastation of the war, and then in basically a decade and a half after the war, they're once you get to the 60s, it just started taking off like crazy. So, there's a lot more money and people are working a lot more. Japan industrialized very quickly, which led to a lot of pollution. By the time you get to the 70s, and there was legislation that was passed in Japan in the 70s to clean everything up because it just got really that bad. It was horrendous. But the big thing with All Monsters Attack or Godzilla's Revenge, as much as that film, at one point, for a while, it was derided, but I think people have come around on it because the premise of the movie is that doesn't even take place in the Godzilla universe. It more likely takes place in the quote unquote real world. The main character is a kid who's a latchkey kid. He loves monsters and he fantasizes about going to Monster Island and hanging out with the kaiju. And he does it to cope with his loneliness because he rarely gets to see his parents anymore.
And I think
it's actually a very sad story, to be honest, even though it turns into Home Alone by the end because he ends up getting kidnapped by burglars and shows Macaulay Culkin how to do it.
I think what also ties the Japanese genre of kaiju film and the American genre of kaiju film, and I think this is what I was leading towards, was it addresses a lot of like the social anxiety of the time. Like even the American films, especially if you're talking like during Cold War and during the Cold War and all the other conflicts that we've had to endure over here, those films still address or even exercise or are a way to cope with the anxieties that were going on in culture at the time.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's doing it subtly. So unlike what a certain Dr. Skipper and Nerdstalgic would tell you, there are far more than three Godzilla films that are about something. I mean, even if all they're doing is just reflecting something interesting that's going on, my first article for Kaiju Ramen was about Okinawa and how I connected everything that was going on in the early to mid 70s with Okinawa to Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, which most people, especially if you're a modern non-Japanese person, you're looking at that thinking, oh, it's just a goofy sci-fi movie. Well, if you know what was going on with Okinawa, because it takes place in Okinawa, if you know what was going on with Okinawa at the time, it gets a heck of a lot more interesting because Okinawa, just a few years before this, had been returned by the Americans who had controlled it since the end of World War II, back to the Japanese. The Okinawa and mainland Japan have a checkered history, to say the least. And the argument can be made. Toho made this movie set on Okinawa, which has a very Okinawan monster in the form of King Caesar, who's a Shisa statue, which is a deeply Okinawan tradition. A Shisa statue, it's like a gargoyle, that they have all over their houses and all. It's supposed to ward off evil spirits, right? And let the good ones in, that sort of a thing. And it's almost like they're saying, "Hey, I know you may not quite like us, but here's a Godzilla movie for you." And then Godzilla, the monster of mainland Japan, and this very Okinawan monster are joining forces to fight an invader together.
Okay.
You know, so again, it's subtle, you know, but it's still fascinating when you know all of this stuff. And if you know anything about Okinawan culture, the things that the kind of weird things that you see in the movie with the priestess who gets an apocalyptic vision that ends up coming true with Mechagodzilla and all that, that might just seem weird. But if you know Okinawan culture, it actually makes all kinds of sense. Because they have priestesses that actually like that.
That ended up being one of my favorite art, if not, well, yeah, that ended up being, because there was a lot of good articles that came through Kaiju Ramen during its time, but that ended up being one of my favorites just because of like the cultural significance. And it actually made me, and so to Nathan's credit, not to bloat his already inflated ego.
Oh, I can't compete with yours, sir. I'm sorry.
Made me actually appreciate Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla from 74 just a little bit more, knowing about more of that cultural context.
Although I still don't understand how an Okinawan priestess can break out into song and there's a band playing for her.
You always got to bring your own accompanying orchestra.
I mean,
you just tell them,
if I was an Okinawan priestess, I would hire a full-time band to just follow me around. And, you know, and anytime I had to pray, I would
hire several.
Like, hey, guys, hit it.
And just have them all around.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, lastly, what is if you had to choose one, what's the most memorable kaiju battle that both of you liked?
Oh, God.
You broke it.
The hard one.
He's in physical pain.
Don't strain yourself.
I was just like, why must you make me choose? It's like asking a parent who's their favorite child. They're a good parent. They're going to have a hard time.
I'm the favorite. If it's starting to hurt, Nathan, just switch positions.
I hit two buttons at the same time.
That takes
the first. The first thing that comes to mind, and some would call it incredibly basic, but I'm going to say the final battle in the train station in Gamera 3. Because it's incredibly intense. It is some of the best Japanese special effects that I have seen in any film. They are Hollywood quality in that. It's immaculately shot. It's claustrophobic because it's in a closed environment. There's a lot of stuff going on with the human story at that point, and it just all comes together very nice. Amazingly well. Yeah. And everything is just executed and integrated just perfection.
You said that's Gamera 3?
Gamera 3 Revenge of Iris.
I'll try and watch that one.
The Gamera trilogy from the 90s is quite possibly peak kaiju cinema. It's some of the best you're going to see. I love Gamera the Brave too. It's unfortunately in the shadow of that trilogy, but it's amazing for different reasons. But I would put Gamera 3 on my Mount Rushmore of kaiju films.
Okay. Michael, did you have a favorite?
Repeat the question again.
Your favorite or most memorable kaiju battle?
Ooh, okay.
He's thinking very hard.
I should say it's hard. It's hard because there's a lot.
For as much as we've consumed, like as much kaiju media as we've consumed and talked about and discussed over the years,
just thousands of hours.
Thousands of hours. Like I'm thinking through like thousands because there's a ton of contenders. You got Godzilla versus Destoroyah, which has its own significance. In terms of it being Godzilla dying, like literally his heart explodes and he just dies.
As a fatal case of heartburn. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally.
I would say both of the Showa Mechagodzilla fights would be in contention.
Both of the Showa Mechagodzilla fights would be in contention because they're so beautifully, I feel like, especially Terror has been, it was beautifully shot.
There's so many great highlights in Terror.
with those very low angles that you don't necessarily get a lot of in the previous film. Monster Zero on Monster Zero, the first fight on the moon.
No, Planet X.
Yeah, with the Giant X. Doug.
Yeah, Giant X. Planet X. Yeah. Sorry.
The end of Destroy All Monsters.
The end of Destroy All Monsters. But I think, you know what, just for the fact that it's like that East meets West, I'm going to go with like King Kong versus Godzilla.
The original? Like,
Original from 62.
The final, their final bout on Mount Fuji, specifically?
Their final bout on Mount Fuji. Now, I will admit, King Kong versus Godzilla is not one that I go back to a lot. But there is a lot of, if you look into that film and its history and how it came about, there is a lot of interesting little nuggets that you can pull from that. It is literally like East meets West. And the argument has been had over and over. I think it's fascinating to listen to fans talk about did Kong win or did Godzilla win? Or did Godzilla die or whatever? Well, obviously we know Godzilla didn't die, but, who won in that battle? So my stance has always been the one you see walking away from the fight, still standing, is the winner. And that's mm-hmm. Kong. But the argument also could be made that Godzilla swam away because Godzilla is very aquatic. Mm-hmm. So it's a toss-up. Like, but I'm just gonna go with that one just because I need something to talk about. Plus, mm-hmm. that its cultural significance of East meeting West.
Okay, it's not that film is not the first kaiju fight, at least in the Godzilla series for sure, because you had that with Raids Again. But I would argue it defined what kaiju fights were going forward, because it's wild.
Yeah,
it absolutely wild.
And fun fact: there is a spot in, to use a pro wrestling term, where Kong judo flips Godzilla. Hamoru Nakajima was still in the suit when they did that.
Yep.
Going forward, if they did a move,
that was not. That was not an empty suit. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, going forward, whenever they did maneuvers like that, it was with an empty suit. But nope, Nakajima was still in that. So when you watch that movie and you see, whoop, ninja monkey right over the back, there's still a human being in that suit.
That's pretty impressive.
Haruo Nakajima was hardcore, and believe it or not, he only ever, he played Godzilla for 18 years over the course of 12 movies, and a bunch of other kaiju and other films and on TV, he only ever got injured once.
And that was actually not in a Godzilla movie. It was in Varan.
Nope. It was in Varan the Unbelievable, because they were supposed to set an exploding truck off under his belly, and it was a little closer to his groin.
Oh.
Great right balls of fire.
And just like that, you're a tenor in the boys' choir.
Hey, but no, there's just too many to pick from. Like honestly, and that sounds like a bullshit cop out, but there just is. There's just a ton of, and they all have their own relevance. Like you look like Godzilla versus Hedorah, the final battle for that film is also just as wild and crazy and weird. Mm-hmm. I was going to say Godzilla versus Gigan is the first instance where we see Godzilla bleed. It's wild.
Make Godzilla bleed.
If it bleeds, we can.
Grab a buzzsaw to your chest.
And it also kind of depends on what you're looking for. If you want sheer, just absolute, just crazy fun, like the last 30 minutes of Godzilla versus Megalon is going to make you very happy because it's just insane. But if you want something with more artistry, there's other examples you could go to. I mean, it just really boils down to what are you looking for.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to wrap this episode up, but we appreciate y'all coming on and telling us and instructing our audience what a kaiju is and the history behind it.
Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Well, Kaiju can take a lot of different forms, you know, Godzilla, Gamera, King Kong, Rosie O'Donnell. Jason Statham, The Rock,
Arnold Schwarzenegger,
all those, all the But yeah, it's whatever your interpretation is, I'm not going to sit here and say that you're wrong.
Unless you're because someone we know.
Unless you're someone we know, like because it really is like I kind of want to land the plane with kind of circling back to where we started. It is really up to interpretation because the name Kaiju is so malleable that it is difficult to just really pin down what the word actually should mean and does mean.
Which I think goes back to just how the Japanese language is. It's there's a level of ambiguity and nuance with the Japanese language because you can change the meaning or the connotation just by your inflection or your tone in the language. And also, if you're writing out kanji, you can change the meaning just by making slight alterations, for what I understand, to some of the kanji. So it's a very nuanced language in that regard. You know, and there's a level of ambiguity to it, which is why I think the Japanese, and culturally speaking, are more comfortable with ambiguity than a lot of Westerners.
All right. Well, before we go, did you want to plug your other podcast real quick?
Go for it, Michael.
Okay. So if you're familiar with mine and Nathan's work on the Power Trip podcast, the Journey Through the Power Rangers franchise, there's two whole seasons of that you can listen to. For season one covers everything, MMPR, Peru, Cosmic Fury.
No, Dino Fury.
Dino Fury. Sorry, Dino Fury.
We even covered Alpha's Magical Christmas.
Alpha's Magical freaking Christmas. And then season two covers comic book, the Boom Studios comic books, a couple of like more obscure comic books, and then some Super Sentai as well, and then of course Cosmic Fury, and then we've got a new episode, or it's been delayed for a very long time, we've got our final episode coming out very soon. As soon as Nathan finishes that edit. So,
I volunteered as tribute. Yeah,
you volunteered as tribute. I appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah.
Outside of that, I don't
know. We also did Once and Always.
Once and Always. That's right.
We talked about a 1 hour special for 3 hours.
Sure did. There was a lot to unpack there. And outside of that, I don't have a lot going on. The Monsters of Attitude, relevant to this episode, is the Monsters of Attitude YouTube channel, where me and a bunch of friends of mine, Eric Stolp, Adrian Settle, Joe Myers, and other Elijah Thomas and others get together. We talk about kaiju, movies, TV, collectibles. We just had our figure of the year show where we talked about like collectible of the year, et cetera, et cetera.
Michael, I missed that. What was the figure of the year?
Oh, figure of the year was the Spiral Studios Burning Godzilla.
The big light up.
No one was.
So we've got that. Right, we've got that. We got that recorded. You can go watch that. We've got another episode being recorded this weekend where we're going to talk about Monarch, Legacy of Monsters. So that's going to be a good show. It's going to be a small crew on that show because it's just going to be like the main guys, me, Joe, Eric, and Adrian on that show, just talking about Monarch Legacy of Monsters, which was a fantastic show. I enjoyed the hell out of it. Outside of that, not a whole lot going on. So, Nathan, go ahead and do shameless self-promotion.
Shameless self-promotion.
Yeah.
So I am the host and curator of the Monster Island Film Vault, a podcast seeking entertainment and enlightenment through tokusatsu. It focuses mostly on film. We've dabbled in television a few times. Michael has been a frequent guest on there. I don't have a set co-host. I have a rotating roster of guest hosts. We've talked some Power Rangers on there. I've brought, Michael, your first appearance on the show was for Gogura, if I remember correctly.
It was indeed so.
Yeah, that semi-obscure Toho film from 1964, which... Yeah, we had a good time about that. We talked about Yakuza and Lovecraftian octopus monsters from space. And, yeah.
The tentacle porn.
We got into all of it. all kinds of things.
All of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also includes some audio drama vignettes that developed very organically. And Michael has at one point played about a quarter of the cast. He loves being the bad guy.
I'm a natural heel.
Yes. Yes, you are. And there's one quite epic episode. It was my second season finale where we talked about drama of the 20th century, which was an Italian film made in Canada. Figure that out. Where Michael did Full Tilt method acting and actually got drunk on the air and somehow didn't break character.
Some of my best work, guys.
It is peak podcasting right there. And according to my podcast host analytics, one of my top 10 most popular episodes. Yep. And I was also the co-host of Henshin Men, which was a tokusatsu superhero TV podcast. It was mostly focused on the original Kamen Rider because it's 98 freaking episodes. I branched out and talked about a few other things, still mostly Kamen Rider focused. That show is being retired along with the Power Trip, unfortunately. Michael and I do have at least one more, beyond the one that has been released, one more episode planned for the Power Trip. But my plan is to start up a spinoff / sequel to both of those shows, which I will, once I've ironed out some more details about that, I'll be sure to let everybody know. And then obviously I'm one of the many actors in Carl Dutton's Scyther podcast stable. I played most infamously Rito on Power Rangers, the audio drama. And I just made my debut on X-Men, the audio drama, as of all people, Deadpool. And I will be appearing in an upcoming episode of Avengers, the audio drama, which is a spinoff from the X-Men show that one of Carl's friends is doing as Johnny Storm, baby. So, you know, that's going to be fun.
Flamer! Flame on! Sorry.
Yes. Yeah. 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 Who's going for the low hanging balls now? I'm just saying.
Hey.
Sounds like you guys are going to have a very busy year.
Yeah, I'm always busy. What are you talking about? And then if you want to, I'm also a writer as well as a podcaster. And if you want to check out my writings, my books, all that fun stuff, go to my author website, NathanJSMarchand.com and MonsterIslandFilmVault.com. And both those websites will give you links to all the socials for all of those things.
Or will they?
Or will they? Yes, they will. Yes, they will. Yes, quite.
Some of the great writings of Charles Kumquat.
Charles Kumquat.
There it is.
You need to be careful because Charles Kumquat's going to have to be something in something I write.
We're going to have to flush that out.
Charles Kumquat will be WHC3's best friend from college or something.
His old roommate.
Yeah, his old roommate. Well, hello, Charles Kumquat. It's been years since I've seen you, old boy.
Charles.
All right, well, that's all we have for this episode. You have me, Mitch. You have
Tom.
And Michael and Nathan.
Oh, yeah, Michael, Nathan, yeah.
And we'll catch you next time.
The gang's all here.